Welcome to a new edition of the Famous Interviews with Joe Domino series. On this episode, we talk with artist, spiritual connector, and author Georgianne Lowe. Her quote in her biography stood out. It said this, "I adore my solitude, but I also adore people." She is a Colorado native that was musically formed by the jazz and big band recordings that her parents were listening to. Having been an actress in the past and more recently a jazz singer and performer, she is easy with expressing herself. She has lived mostly alone for the past 20 years and has been meditating since she was 28. In her book, Resurrecting Bunny, she recounts her 70-year spiritual journey. It's a fascinating conversation. Enjoy.
Hello.
Hi, Georgianne.
Hi.
How are you?
I am very, very nice. Thank you. I like your interviews. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I like your vibe. I reading through your bio, what sticks out to me is that you adore your solitude, but you also adore people. I totally understand.
Yeah. That's a very good way to be, I think.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking with you. Thanks for reaching out. There's so many things about your life and what you do and how you live that I want to delve into. So, again, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate what you do. Thank you for bringing all of us out to the world, you know, all of your interviews. I appreciate that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm just standing on the shoulders of giants. That's all I'm doing. So
we all are.
Yeah, right. So you have a jazz background. You're a Colorado native. There's a lot that goes into who you are. So before we get to that, I'm curious how you survived COVID. What did COVID do for you? Now that we're kind of on the back end of things, how did this time on Earth, the last 2 years, treat you?
Oh, well, at the very beginning, I was terrified. You know, living by myself is something I love, but I was really scared. So in the midst of all of that, I moved out next door to my kids, my three grandchildren, my son, and my daughter-in-law. They're very a very lovely family, and they give me support, but they also give me complete freedom and sovereignty. So, I mean, it's not like I live next door to family in some ways. You know, I'm just free to do what I do. But anyway, the COVID thing, I thought, well, there's no problem for me. I'm used to and I love being by myself. I wrote another book during that time and got it published. So I just kind of did my usual art and stuff that I do. But I didn't realize I was getting really neurotic. I only noticed it when the COVID thing was over, and I noticed coming out of my, you know, cocoon was kind of weird for me, and I didn't realize how weird I was getting. But anyway, I did notice after a while.
Well, I think all of us went through levels of shock. I remember speaking to a musician in April of 2020 after it happened, and he was a really big musician. He basically was equating this to getting something like cancer. You know, we all were told something's coming. We got it, and then we were told the treatment, and then we went into remission, and we all had to kind of deal with it, and we had to do it collectively. But I really genuinely believe that anybody operating at any level of baseline above or below that, to survive, you had to do it. And that's just the way it is. It, you know, and it's not only, especially for America, that we had to deal with the pandemic. We added, you know, things like George Floyd, class war, race war, all these other things. So it was almost as though we were already on a precipice as humans. And when this happened, it just took the magnifying glass and just threw it right over our souls.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, because getting in touch, the soul work has become even much more important than it was before pre-pandemic. And going through all that we're going through, we need to know who we are, each one of us, as souls. And then we need to join together to keep things going in a good direction, because there is a lot out there that's trying to keep America from working, trying to keep the world from working well. You know, there's a lot of negativity, evil out there. And we can unite. The deeper we know ourselves, the more we can give to the situation to heal it.
So, you know, you're an artist, spiritual connector, musician. I'm going to kind of start at the top here and begin with your childhood in Colorado. Clearly, you've had these wheels in you that have been creative and inquisitive for a long, long time. So let's start with your childhood and kind of work towards this life that you've built for yourself now.
That's fine with me because I think a lot of it just goes back to who I was as a baby, that essential self, that joyous little being that I still can contact. I was just doing it lying on my bed. I was in touch with myself as a little baby, very healthy, very vibrant, very in touch with spirit, very, just everything was just very natural for me and joyous. I've always had the joy and the optimism of my Sagittarius sign, I guess, and living in Colorado with all of our sunshine. And that's where I started, and I lost it. I lost that joyous child self, and that's where my second book, Resurrecting Bunny, A Wild Child's Pilgrimage, came from. It came from the fact that when I left home, which was the morning after I graduated from high school, because I was really sick of living in a small town in Colorado, I went to New York, and then I went to California. I went back and forth and became a hippie, became a raging flower child. And in that process, Joe, I did so many drugs, and I lost my joy eventually. It just flattened out. And I kind of knew when I started doing drugs, and I kind of knew I would have to someday learn to meditate. And so as I came out of all of that, when I was about 28, I started meditating, and I have never stopped. So,
you know, the interesting thing about meditation is that to the outside world, when you start talking about certain things like that, I don't know that people grasp it. What would be the best way for you to describe the healing powers, the joy that you get out of meditation for somebody that's not familiar with how it works and what it does to your entirety?
Well, it's kind of like what I was talking about in silence, which we don't have enough of in our lives here in America, especially. We can find that connection to source, and that you can call it whatever you want. It doesn't have to be spiritual. It doesn't have to be religious by any means, but it's a connection within your heart to the source of all being. And by meditating every day, you go back to that. It's like you submerge yourself in the waters, the healing waters, again, by getting quiet. So it's not sitting and just thinking or sitting still. It's a practice of going beneath your thoughts so that you can allow spaciousness to come to you.
And, you know, and what you're talking about, not having enough quiet in the world and just the way the world is, and there's levels of it that are unraveling. You know, how important would it be for more people to embrace the idea of meditation and listening
yes.
to the surroundings?
Yes.
How important do you think that would be?
I really think I have known all the way along since I first started doing it that it would change the world if everybody did this. Certainly change each person, because right now there's a big drive for people to be themselves. You know, there are a lot of wonderful coaches out there who are bringing out the dynamic, you know, energy in each of us and so on. And yet I feel like the one thing that's missing is finding out who you are. Okay, it's fine to say, hey, I'm going to just be myself here. But, you know, how deep do you want to go? How many levels do you want to transverse to understand really who you are? And it's a Jungian thing, and it's a know thyself thing, and it takes work, and it's not easy sometimes to see what you see. But yeah, it's the most important thing we could do.
And I think that's hard for our culture because we're so surface. We worship these things that are easy and that are digestible that we get, whether it's celebrity or media or athletes or whatever. It's like we don't ever really kind of it almost seems like it's too hard for a lot of people to take that further and to go deeper below the surface.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that they think it's too hard, and it is hard, but there's such joy in it. It releases such joy and imagination in your life. And without it, I think a life is rather dull. And especially, you know, relying on, you know, sports events or celebrities or whatever to get your jollies, that's it's in yourself. There's such beauty and creativity within yourself. So to live without it, I think, is a tragedy.
What was that Beatles line, the love you make is equal to the love you take, something along those lines?
Love it. I love
it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's that idea, you know. I mean, it really is kind of that yin-yang kind of thing. So let's go back to your childhood. I know the big bands and Ella Fitzgerald and a lot of those things were really kind of soundtracks that you listened to. What was it about that music that gave you that love of jazz and desire to not only get into singing but to get into theater and kind of go down that route in your life?
Well, I think it's what it did to my parents. It made them alive. It made them so happy to listen to Louis Armstrong or Ella Fitzgerald and the big bands, you know. And I could just, you know, I can almost just picture them dancing and joyous. And my mother was a singer as well. So I think it just turned me on to the power of music. The magic of music, how music can change whatever is happening and bring a whole new level of life and comfort. You know, I think music is wonderful for healing. One of the songs I write is, "If not to love, then what is music for? If not to heal, then what is music for?" Yeah, and it's children dancing in the storm, seduced by darkness. Don't dance with destruction. Don't dance with destruction. And that's what I sing about. And that's why, actually, Joe, you know, it's funny. When I knew I was going to do this jazz interview, I thought, well, I just kind of am very quiet in my house. I don't have jazz. I don't have music playing. When I play music, it's jazz. But I don't have music on all the time because I want quiet.
Yeah, I get that. I think I'm getting that more and more as I get older. You know, the interesting thing about music is that it's the one language we can all understand. I mean, there's hundreds of languages on this planet. And it genuinely is that one thing that really does bring comfort to everyone one way or another.
Yeah.
And I even think about that with, like, COVID. Like, if we didn't have music in those times when we were alone, or TV or film, can you imagine? I mean, because that's the thing about, like, when I interview a lot of Canadian jazz artists, they talk, you know, they have their free healthcare system, and a lot of grants they get come from the government. How wonderful would that be for your government to put its money where its mouth is, to not worry about going bankrupt because of healthcare, and to have your government say, you know, we're going to give you money to create art, to uphold the well-being and spirituality of your population.
Yeah.
What do you
I mean, that's a value I wish we had. We're too money-oriented.
Yeah.
And that's all I'm going to even say about that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think that it helps so much to be able to watch something, you know, something wonderful or a mystery or whatever, at the end of the day, and listen to some music. Yeah, I think it changes everything.
So as a singer and as an actress, is the theater been kind of a second home to you? Has that been a comfort source for you?
Well, when I was younger, it was. I went to the Pasadena Playhouse, and I did some acting in New York and California. And Santa Fe. I was really into the scene in Santa Fe, which was great fun. But no, I don't even do that anymore. I'm not interested in trading off my personality or, you know, I think for my type of person and my identity, I had so many identity crises, I couldn't even count them. that to stay in theater was not. I sort of got my feet wet. I swam in those waters a bit, especially in California. But then I left it to go. I wanted to find the real world. I wanted to find, okay, where is it for me? And I always wanted to sing, but gosh, I was really, really neurotic in, when I was doing drugs, and I could barely speak. So I certainly couldn't sing, and I was around all these great musicians, you know, in New York and LA and San Francisco. And I absorbed a lot, but the singing came later. I found my voice. I found my voice, and I've been singing ever since.
Let's talk about your book, Resurrecting Bunny. And, you know, talk about the journey of getting to the point where you're going to write a book and you're going to put a lot of who you are into that.
Oh, gosh, I had no choice, really, Joe. I started with a book called Dancing Alone, which was my life in France, because I lived a good deal of the time in France for about 15 years. I had a little house there. And that's when I began to explore my solitude, my art, my music, because I sang with French musicians. I've always written, ever since I could write, because I want to express what's going on, because it's interesting to me what's going on. It's exciting. And so I finally just gathered all these journals and papers and so on, scraps of paper, and put them in Dancing Alone several years ago. So I had my first book out. And then the second one, Resurrecting Bunny, A Wild Child's Pilgrimage, is more about my sort of spiritual journey. Like, how in the world did somebody like me end up, you know, going to St. John's Cathedral in Denver, an Episcopal cathedral? How did I end up doing that when I was a yogi and a meditator for, you know, 40 years or whatever? And how could I find, how could I be open enough, really, to find what speaks to me from the Episcopalian point of view or, you know, experience? And I find it very rich. My practice is meditation, and I have a guru, you know, through Self-Realization Fellowship. I still have my guru. So it's funny. I feel like I just kind of bring East and West together. I studied at Naropa as well. And I wanted to write about all of that. I wanted to write about how I ended up where I am. And I think that the glory is, for any life, is to end up being yourself.
Yeah.
I have to laugh because I always wanted to be myself, but I didn't know who the hell that was. And it was kind of scary.
Yeah. Well, when you were young, what was your dream growing up? Did you have like a dream that you aspired to?
Well, yeah, I think I kind of would. Elvis was kind of before my time, but I like to go in my room and put on my sister's Elvis record and dance to it and pretend like I was Elvis. So I did have some of that going on, you know. So I had an active imagination.
As a writer, what book has moved you the most? What book has always been something you've come back to or it's reverberated with you?
Well, I read a lot of mystery novels. Medieval mystery novels. That's my kind of escape, wonderful escape reading. Jane Eyre changed me as a young girl, and the English classics changed me, gave me some values. The Wizard of Oz, those were books I read as a very young kid. I read a lot of John O'Donohue, because I find him so inspiring. So Anamkara and To Bless the Space Between Us. I've read a lot of Seeds of Contemplation, Thomas Merton. Carl Jung changed my life at a certain point when I read, I opened a book to something I needed to hear right at that moment. When I was in New York City living with junkies. And what I read in Carl Jung's Memories, Dreams, Reflections just made me close the book and get a ticket back to Colorado. So, you know, so many books have been powerful in my life.
Wonderful. So who would you consider heroes or inspirations in your life?
Who are my heroes? Oh, my goodness. Who are my heroes? I don't really know anymore. I'm my own hero, frankly. But looking outside myself, I'm involved in this group called Braver Angels. And to me, these people are heroes because they're from both sides of the political spectrum, and they are trying to heal our nation by having conversation, and conversation couched in polite, completely expressive, but no name calling or, you know, derogatory stuff. And those are my heroes right now. Anybody who's living a good life, like my kids are my heroes. They're all working really hard to just be a good person on the planet, raising children or not, but working hard and being a part of the solution to things. So it's everyday people I just run into who are really my heroes.
So I'm going to kind of add on to that and ask you, if you have the opportunity to talk to anybody alive right now on the planet, and you could go and hang out and talk to them, who would you like to talk to?
Well, I've already met the Dalai Lama, but I didn't get to really chat with him. But I don't know. I think he's got a really good sense of humor, so I might want to talk to him, have some laughs.
Yeah.
I'd say anybody with a sense of humor. So that rules out anybody who's a grump and trying to ruin the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think I have a feeling how you're going to answer this next one, but I'm going to ask you, if you have a dream tonight and you run into the younger version of yourself, say in your early 20s, and you could give your younger version one piece of advice based on the wisdom that you've gained over all these years, what would you tell your younger version?
I would just simply say, take deep breaths and...
Right.
Keep your sense of humor and don't take it so seriously, because my God, was I serious. I say in my book, I've discovered my inner chuckle, and I have. It's just kind of like, Joe, I can't help it. It's like I just laugh all the time. It's really kind of funny.
Yeah.
And I dance. I dance too. So keep dancing. I'd also give my younger self that cue, but I was dancing anyway, so that I wouldn't have to tell myself that. I can tell you
right
that.
On. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, everyone has a version of who they think you are. Your family, your friends, your kids, those that know you, but ultimately you live your life. You have a perception of you. Who do you ultimately think you are?
It's always changing. I don't find... that personhood or individuation, whatever you want to call it, is something that's set in stone. What I think I finally have relaxed about is that it's always changing. I'm a very changeable person. That inner chuckle, that laughter is almost always with me. I don't know. I'm just enjoying life more and more the older I get. I like it.
Perfect. Georgianne, this has been wonderful. Thank you for opening up. Thank you for talking to me about your world, your life, and everything in it. And before we go, I want you to tell me the best way that those out there listening can get your books, can learn about you more, anything related to your world. What should they do?
Well, I have a very, very good website, and it's georgiannelowe.com, and it has all my stuff on it, music, writing, blog, whatever, you know, art, has a lot of my art on there. The thing is that there's only one E in Georgianne Lowe. And so tell me where you think it is.
Well, there's only one right after the G.
Yeah, there you go. The first G.
Yeah, the first G, yes. I guess I see it a little bit because I had to do my homework. So, yeah. Might be harder for
others. Well, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. But that's where it is. That's where my life is on my website. The only thing I don't have on there is a little dance or two.
Maybe this interview will make people dance a little bit. So, Yeah,
because that's what I like to do. I really like it when people feel good.
I actually went with my wife to a wedding reception the other day, and there was a local jazz band and then a funk band, and she was out there dancing so much, she said the next day her hips hurt. So that's probably what you want out of life, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Hey, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this. I think just keep doing what you're doing. You're great.
Thank you.
You're contributing.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, you too. Yeah. I mean, there's so many wonderful human beings on the planet. There's so many different perspectives and positive ways of looking at things. And I think we're at definitely a precipice of our human existence where we need people like you that are putting out really good things and contributing in a very positive way, very, very positive way. So thank you.
And thank you for bringing us to light, for bringing us to sound.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in to another Famous Interview with Joe Domino, where we cover the world of art, literature, and music around the globe. Most of the music on these episodes comes from the great Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. You can visit Neon Jazz at YouTube. And for everything Joe Domino related, go to joedomino.com. And when you're there, you can donate via PayPal or Patreon. Until next time.
For love.